This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
Welcome back, Scott Hamilton Show, on a Freshwater Tuesday. Lane Kiffin's got a big game this week.
Yes, he does. It's going to be a fun one.
You know, there are some people that have gone public, and we'll reveal our picks later this week, actually picking Joey Freshwater to beat King Nick Saban.
Wow, outright. Wow.
Outright. Okay. 14-point spread right now, right?
Yeah.
Is it 14 or 17?
I think last time we checked, it was 14.5.
Don't bet against Joey Freshwater, man.
Never.
Don't.
Never.
He will take you down. Speaking of taking down, a lot of folks are celebrating with glee around the ACC, saying Clemson is being taken down as the overlords of the Atlantic Coast Conference. I think that's presumptuous. It's September. A lot of football remains to be played. But things are definitely different in the upstate. Not quite panic yet. We would have addressed that, I think, on Panic Monday, but it's definitely different than what we're used to. How different is it? Well, we're going to ask this guy. Joining us on the Saitama guest hotline is Larry Williams of Tiger Illustrated. Larry, good morning.
Good morning. Can I talk about Ole Miss for a minute?
Absolutely, brother. Bring it.
Have y'all seen them? Have y'all seen Matt Corral play?
Oh, there we go, King. Bring it. Preach.
I'm just asking.
I love him.
Oh, my goodness. I'm of the belief, I thought going into the season that defenses were going to answer in large part because you have a bunch of stud defense players coming back, but also because guys like Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson and Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow don't grow on trees. Well, I'll tell you what, Corral is right there. He's the only quarterback I've seen this season who is firmly in the category of those quarterbacks I've mentioned. And you put that with Kiffin's offense? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're going to win. I think picks are overrated and stupid, kind of. I'm just excited to watch this game because this guy at quarterback and that offense are hell on wheels, and it's really cool. Maybe I'm just fascinated by them because of the offense that I'm watching every week here at Clemson. I don't know.
Well, that makes a Corvette look like a Ferrari because you're sitting around watching, you know, a Volkswagen all week. I will say before we go on to the Clemson Tigers, I liked Plumlee. I thought he was a pretty good quarterback for Ole Miss. And Corral, I'm like, well, you know, he'll take him a little while to develop. But he is the perfect Lane Kiffin quarterback. And
man.
But also, Larry, people forget, they've got a pretty good run game. Everything they do consists of also a power run game, and everybody thinks Lane Kiffin just throws it up and down the field, tempo, 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 but a lot of that tempo is predicated on the run game.
They ran for 250 against Alabama last year.
Yes, and the clipboard went 65 yards.
Yes, and so you're exactly right, and I think the new thing this year for Ole Miss is their defense looks better. They look more physical, more resistant. I mean, it's hard to get less resistant than they were last year. But I have a major man crush on Corral. I didn't watch him last year. I just didn't really have time, didn't really bother to. And I sat there and watched that Louisville game, their opener, and was blown away. And then watched their them rip apart Tulane, which is a pretty good team, little team. He reminds me of Joe Burrow, with a more mobile Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow is pretty damn mobile. Anyway, I'm fascinated by this matchup for sure.
Well, then let me throw this at you because we've actually got a pretty good flow going here. I'm going to ride it out for a minute. I've got to rank Ole Miss ahead of Oklahoma. You look at the common opponent, Tulane. Oklahoma slipped by, 5 points in Norman?
Mm-hmm, 5 points.
Yeah, and then Ole Miss blows its doors off. Right now, that Louisville win looks pretty good. I don't know why, how, in good conscience, they can have Oklahoma ranked ahead of Ole Miss.
I was this week, you read all the college football writers, the national writers saying, okay, who's in that next tier? of teams that could, you know, shake things up and maybe get to the playoff. None of them are mentioning Ole Miss that I can see. And I think some folks are in for a rude awakening. Based on what I've seen, and I don't really use the common opponent thing as much as just what I see with my eyes, I would put Ole Miss in the top five. You know, it's the same thing as like the Georgia defensive line and linebackers. Like, I don't care what, like, I mean, PFF, Pro Football Focus, last week ranked the best defensive lines in college football. They graded them over the season to that point. Georgia wasn't even in the top five. What are we doing? Is anybody actually watching these games? Because that Georgia defensive front is maybe the best defensive front I've ever seen. Like, they're right up there with Alabama's 2016 defense as a whole, and I think they might be better. So anyway, to your question about Ole Miss, yes. Like, to me, Corral and Ole Miss's offense is one of the top three most fascinating and exciting things about college football this season. And one of the other ones is Georgia's defensive line and linebackers. Like, it's just otherworldly. So maybe I look like an idiot Saturday night, Corral throws six interceptions and they lose by 40, but I don't think so, man. I think this is a real threat to Alabama. We'll see. Forget I even said it if Ole Miss falls apart.
We're joined by Larry Williams of Tiger Illustrated. Follow him on Twitter at Larry Williams TI. And you mentioned Georgia's defense and Georgia's front line and all that, and it just absolutely mauled Clemson's offense, but it seems like everybody's mauling Clemson's offense. And I guess the basic question is, the umbrella question, Larry, is this. What's the temperature upstate these days?
Well, you mentioned they're not at panic stage yet. They kind of are. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to say it, you know. So far this season has been sort of a series of more serious reality checks in terms of, you come out of the Georgia game saying, okay, they didn't get to the end zone against Georgia, but that was an elite defense they faced. Well, then they come out against Georgia Tech and score 14 points, and you're like, ooh, so things are pretty bad. And then you go into the NC State game thinking, okay, well, maybe the baby steps we saw from DJ Uiagalelei against Georgia Tech, because he did make some good plays in that game, particularly on third down. Maybe this trajectory is headed up and they're going to sort of come out of their shells a little bit at NC State. Nope. And then another one of those is that they're going to orchestrate in Raleigh is going to produce better results. Nope. And so now, to the present, you're facing all those shattered, optimistic notions, glass half full notions, and now you got to go without Will Shipley, who absolutely, in my opinion, he has established himself as one of the top five players on the team, and one of the main leaders on that offense, which to me says something about the lack of leadership of the guys who, you know, of the veterans who aren't freshmen and who should be sort of more of those figurehead types. So they have lots of issues. I know that in our sort of discourse today, whether it's politics or sports or whatever, we want to reduce the blame to one thing, to one person. And so, you know, a lot of folks calling for Tony Elliott's firing, you know, a lot of folks saying, oh, it's just the offensive line. A lot of folks saying, oh, it's just the quarterback. I think it's closer to 10 things than just one thing.
Let me get your take on this, Larry. It reminds me somewhat of what Alabama went through just a couple of years ago. You know, Clemson curb stomped them in the national title game, and then the Tide missed the playoff altogether the next season. And a lot of folks are saying, oh, you know, this is Alabama on the decline, and is Nick Saban done, and all this and all that. But they ended up rebounding, and, well, of course, they did what they did last year, maybe the greatest team I've ever seen. How different is this scenario from what Alabama endured just in the recent future, recent past, rather?
That's a great question. It absolutely has to be remembered and acknowledged that almost nobody out there in the playoff era has gone without sort of existential questions. You know, Ohio State, they won it all in 14 and looked like they were going to be a mainstay as a title contender. Well, they missed the playoff in 15. They get back in 16, get just absolutely mauled by Clemson in the semifinal. They miss it in 17. They miss it in 18. They get back in 19 and lose to Clemson again. So what I'm saying, you know, they've been a bit of a roller coaster at Ohio State of all places. You know, Georgia. 2 years ago, Georgia lost at home to South Carolina, a bad South Carolina team. They face lots of existential questions. Oklahoma, right now, almost a carbon copy in terms of offensive problems to Clemson's. And that's a shock because Lincoln Riley was the supposed genius and boy wonder who could turn any and every quarterback into a Heisman contender. They're having major offensive issues, largely because of an offensive line. You mentioned the 44-16, and back then, you know, 2 years ago, well, I guess 3 years ago, less than 3 years ago, you know, the common sort of takeaway from that game in California was, oh my gosh, is Dabo running away from everybody? Is Nick Saban, is this thing collapsing as his assistant coaching staff is like a revolving door? Like, is that catching up to him? I have been wondering, and I'm not making this case, but it's been something I've thought about over the last several weeks as Clemson sort of has become more and more obvious that they are closer to mediocrity than they are to playoff caliber right now. Was the 44-16, did it create a sense of complacency a little bit with Clemson enough for them to lose some of their edge? And then on the other hand, was that result that night so profound that it shook up Clemson's competition, not just Alabama, but Georgia, Ohio State, shook them up enough to say, whoa, we better get our crap together or else we're not going to be able to keep up with these guys. So maybe sort of like on one hand, it's the natural complacency, perhaps. I'm not making this case. Again, please don't misunderstand. It's just something I've been thinking about and wondering about. I don't know. But it's hard to stay at the top, man. It's harder to stay there almost than it is to get there. But I think Clemson right now, I think it is fair to say, man, they have some – this is a reckoning for them in a number of ways in their sort of pursuit of getting back, reclaiming what they had. And I would say what they took – what a lot of people took for granted, a lot of people on the outside. I mean, it was only a couple of years ago people were like, oh, I'm bored with this regular season schedule and the ACC. I'm tired of winning by 40-plus points. Oh, God, another playoff. Here we go. You know, got to get the championship. Got to win it all. Well, hey, man, now you look at – I got pictures on my wall of some of those playoff stadiums, press boxes. I'm like, man, just as a neutral observer, it's like you appreciate it more. Like, whoa, you kind of took it for granted a little bit. I'm rambling, but – does that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely it does. And I think you've hit on a couple of different things. You talk about the complacency, and that's only natural because they had gotten to a point of success that kept happening. And when you have that success so regularly, yeah, you're going to fall into some bad habits. But I think you're also going to fall into bad habits when you don't have a lot of experience. We forget Dabo's not that old, and he hasn't been right. A head coach but a decade. So once you reach a certain point, you have to shift your mindset and figure out how to sustain things the way they are sustaining it. And I think it takes a Nick Saban, who's older and more experienced, to really know how to navigate those waters. Does that make sense? I mean, look at Bill Belichick. He wasn't a good coach for a long time, but he was able to evolve and adapt. And I think Dabo, for the first time in his career, is having to evolve and adapt. And, Larry, I think that's the hallmark of the great coaches, your ability to evolve and adapt. And we're going to find out just how good Dabo is now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I will point out that even though Dabo has not been around for nearly as long as Saban and Belichick, of course. Very early on in his tenure, in 2010, his second full season, the questions during that season as the offense struggled almost, you know, to the extent it is now, people are asking, hey, is he going to be able to look past the relationships he has with some of these coaches and make the changes that probably needed to be made? There was some skepticism that he could do that even then. Well, he turns around and does it. He fires Billy Napier, gets rid of Andre Powell, the running backs coach, brings in Chad Morris from outside, new ideas, the Gus Malzahn system, brings in Tony Elliott as a running backs coach. And then a year later, after they achieve really a success that they hadn't achieved in two decades by winning the ACC finally, you know, you lose to West Virginia 70-33. You get hammered by South Carolina and Columbia. You get hammered by NC State and Raleigh. The defense was the problem. He cut ties with Kevin Steele, brought in Brent Venables. So while I think it's fair to ask if he's going to adapt right now moving forward, I do think there is a record of him being able to recognize, hey, these problems are fundamental and we got to get this fixed. And I do think he realizes, too, that the program is at a whole different level now than it was in 2010 when they're just trying to get an ACC championship. He knows that standard is so much tougher and it's so much harder to compete when you're at the top or near the top of the mountain or trying to get back to the top of the mountain. You know, I mean, Alabama, what Nick Saban has done is just amazing, absolutely amazing. He's become a master of adaptation. And over in Athens, Kirby Smart has what looks to be a program that looks quite similar to what Alabama has built. So it ain't getting any easier. But you did mention the inexperience. I think that inexperience with the players is a very big deal. They haven't been this inexperienced at every position group since I think about 2014 maybe. And the difference back then is you have Deshaun Watson, who's just Superman and who can, you know, who can put everybody on his back. DJ, not that type of player at the same stage, which, you know, I don't know who he is. You know, I think people have gotten a little spoiled at the quarterback spot in the last however many 5 or 6 years because you're used to Trevor Lawrence, you're used to Deshaun Watson. Those are two just superstar playmakers. DJ, he's not at the same stage or at the same level at the same stage. Who knows? He could get there, but he's not there yet.
Incredible insight and perspective from Larry Williams of Tiger Illustrated. You can follow him on Twitter at Larry Williams TI. Larry, buddy, we're going to bring you on every Tuesday when we got to talk about Ole Miss, man.
Hey, man. If they lose by 40, we'll just forget this. But if they look really good, I'll come back next Tuesday. No, I'm just kidding. I'll come back regardless. I'm fascinated by this offense. Would love to.
All right, man. We appreciate it, buddy. Have a good one.
See you, man.
All right, this is Larry Williams of Tiger Illustrated on the Saitama Guest Hotline.